Welcome to InVision Radio with Will Bowen. Please keep your arms and feet inside until the ride comes to a complete stop. Now, here's Will.
Thank you very much, Dave Murphy. Well, welcome to another episode of InVision Radio. I'm Will Bowen. And if you enjoy this episode, I welcome you to podcast these episodes. You can use your smartphone, your tablet, or even your computer. You can go to willbowenradio.com or in iTunes. You can put in Will Bowen and you can podcast, or you can download these podcasts to your phone and listen to them anytime you'd like. Today's show is about heroes. Now, what is a hero? Well, the word hero comes from the Greek heros. Of course, in the masculine form, it's hero. In the feminine form, it's heroine. And it means someone who has stood strong in the face of adversity and inspired others in the process. Someone who has stood strong in the face of adversity and inspired others in the process. We're going to talk about this concept of heroes and who our heroes are. And we're also going to talk with three people who are helping people either to become heroes or are themselves a hero or is celebrating and drawing out the hero within other people. I noticed when I was Googling for this show on heroes, there's a lot of websites that want to help you answer the question, who is your hero? And I thought, well, that's kind of great. People are wanting to help others figure out who their hero is so they can decide how they want to maybe improve and mold their lives after this person. But that's not what they're wanting to do. What they're wanting to do is to help you give the right answer so that you can get a job in a job interview. You see, employers know that if they ask you who your hero is, ideally, you will express someone and they can say, oh, the characteristics of this person is or that person is. And if you don't have a hero, then you possibly don't have any aspirations. And so they ask this question. Well, so now people don't know what to say. And of course, people overprepare rather than just being themselves and being genuine, which is the key, because then they would end up working in a place where they resonated from the very beginning. They come in with a canned answer. They're told not to mention sports celebrities or celebrities in general, because the interviewer could have predispositions against whomever they name. But it's important to have selected someone so that you can then impress that person and make them think that you do indeed have the characteristics that you think they are looking for in the job. Wow. So, there's a whole lot of deception going on there. Let's get to the heart of the matter. Who are your heroes? Who are the people that have inspired you? When I was in China on a speaking tour, I was talking with someone about the latest superhero movie. I think we were talking about the Avengers at that point. And this person in China had obviously seen the Avengers. And I said, well, tell me about some of China's superheroes. And she smiled and said, we don't have any. I said, what do you mean you don't have any superheroes? She said, here in China, everything is celebrated based on the collective rather than the individual. There's a saying in Asia that the nail that stands out gets hammered down. Think about it. Most, if not all, international superheroes came from the United States. In the United States, we are predisposed to taking risks and trying things and standing up in the face of adversity. And I think we define ourselves in many ways by who our heroes are. So, again, I ask the question, who are your heroes? We're going to be talking about that today. I'm very excited that I have a book coming out later this year. It's called To You Love God. To You Love God is a daily email that's now predominantly a Facebook post that I write every day. And it is as if God were offering advice, inspiration, etc. And this one I actually wrote about 3 years ago, but it's very germane to what we're talking about today because it's on heroes. And it goes, to you, every hero is victorious over insurmountable odds. Without struggles and difficulties, there would be no hero. A hero perseveres in the face of doubt, opposition, and uphill battles. A hero is someone who does not give up. The hero does not fully grasp their capacity until they are tested. It is the very test that reveals the hero's strength and power. Give thanks, therefore, for your struggles and difficulties. They shake your soul and release your glory. Take a look at your current challenge and have faith. Keep going and know that I am with you, just as I have been with every truly remarkable hero. Every hero needs a challenging situation to overcome. I was reading an interview the other day with Dan Gilbert, the author of the book Stumbling Upon Happiness, and he talks about in the work environment, people don't need to be frightened. They need to have a challenge. They need to be happy, and they need to have a challenge. People like challenges. They look forward to that. So we are all predisposed to be heroes, that is to face challenges and to overcome them, and in the process to inspire others. So in today's show, we're going to talk about heroes, and first you're going to meet Mark Schellinger. Mark is the founder of the nonprofit SAMS Innovation Project. Many people, when asked who's been a hero to you, will answer, a teacher. Well, Mark's organization is dedicated to equipping school principals so that they cut down their managing of buildings and navigating red tape and increase their time, helping teachers shine, helping teachers be heroes. Find out how the SAMS Project is positively transforming schools. Then, in the Namaste Lounge, disco legend Gloria Gaynor. Gloria Gaynor's double platinum mega hit song, I Will Survive, helped a lot of people discover the hero that dwells within themselves. Her book, We Will Survive, details some of the many people whose lives were changed by this song. And then is the parting shot in today's program, Dr. Maya Angelou. Everyone knows her name, and Oprah Winfrey has stated that Dr. Angelou is her hero and mentor. Science of Mind magazine named Dr. Angelou the 2013 Spiritual Hero of the Year. She shares her heroes with us in this exclusive interview. But first, Mark Schellinger of the SAMS Innovation Project. Hang around. We're going to have some fun.
What's the best vitamin for happiness? Find out on page 31. How can you overcome the biggest obstacle to happiness? That's on page 85. What's the fastest route to feeling happier? Check page 124. If you're looking for a manual for happiness, this is it. The book is Happy This Year, The Secret to Getting Happy Once and for All by Will Bowen. In this inspiring and practical book, you'll find proven real-world steps you can incorporate into your life to experience more joy in everything you do. This is the manual for happiness. In fact, the Dale Carnegie Institute of Asia selected Happy This Year as the textbook for classes on how to become a happier person. If you're serious about being happy, get Happy This Year, The Secret to Getting Happy Once and for All by Will Bowen. Available from Grand Harbor Press in hardback, ebook, and audiobook format read by the author. Your destiny is to be happy. Don't wait to be happy someday. Get happy this year.
You got an accent, the positive, eliminate the negative and latch on to the affirmative, don't mess with Mr. In-Between.
Welcome back to Invisible Radio. We're talking about heroes this week. If you ask people who has been a hero to them, I would project that probably 8 out of 10 would say a teacher. I myself can remember a particular professor when I was in college. I grew up in an environment where we didn't really celebrate culture much, and someone suggested that I take Shakespeare. And I can remember this man walking in. He had difficulty walking. He walked with crutches, and yet he just beamed this smile. And I remember he told us the first day, he said, if I can help just one of you so that you will meet me on the street 20 years from now and say, you know, I love Shakespeare because of you, he said, my whole life would have been worth it. And I never had the opportunity, but I can tell you, to this day, I read the works of William Shakespeare. My daughter and I read it, and we never fail to go to the Shakespeare in the Park Festival. Teachers are heroes, and yet so often today we hear people talking about the negative things that are going on in our schools. Why? Because as we complain, we get power, and schools become a battleground for power so often. Well, quietly, but very successfully, another organization is helping to make heroes, not only of our teachers, but our principals, by helping them do their work better. And I'm talking about the SAMS Innovation Project. Their website is samsconnect.com. We'll talk more about that as far as how to get in touch with them. But first, I want to welcome their executive director, Mark Schellinger. Mark, welcome to Envision.
Hey, thanks, Will. How are you today?
Oh, I'm doing great. And you?
Life is good.
Tell me, if you would, how SAMS came to be.
Well, I was a principal, and I always wondered, is it possible for a principal to spend most of their time doing things that would help teachers do better in the classroom? Could you focus your energy and your time on things that would have a positive result in terms of teacher performance and then student learning? And so I had the opportunity a few years ago through the Wallace Foundation to explore that idea, and through that we created the SAM process, a way of helping a principal do just that, make the time they spend with teachers and other adults in the building, all aimed at helping kids do better, the main thing. Because really, when you think about it, and using your example about the Shakespeare story, you want to be remembered for the things you add in life, don't you?
Absolutely.
And true success is what you do that's going to outlive you, and that's why teachers are heroes, because they do things that outlive them. We work with principals to make that job easier.
Well, and you talk about doing things that are in a positive way. The word positive, it's funny, I actually looked it up. It means to focus on that which is present rather than that which is absent. And so often, principals as well as other executives tend to focus on problems because they are constantly being handed problems. But as an exception, SAMS gets principals to focus on what is going well and also to manage their lives a little better. Can you tell us more about first of all, what does the acronym SAM stand for? And what is it that you do to help principals, thereby helping schools?
SAM stands for School Administration Manager, but really it's people in the school, like a secretary or a vice principal, that the principal approaches and says, would you work with me every day to help me be reflective, to think through what I'm doing and whether or not it's helping teachers get better? And so it's a process really than a person. It's a system that the principal engages in where first he or she determines how they're currently spending their time, and we do that through a shadowing set of activities for a week.
Mm-hmm.
And then they take that data and they begin increasing each day the amount and the kinds of activities that they do that they think will have a positive impact in terms of change or teacher practice. They meet every day with their SAM team, and during that time, the SAM team tries to help the principal identify what the principal saw and how they can move forward on it. So a SAM team might say to a principal, did you do your walkthrough in third grade today? And the principal said, yes, I did my walkthrough. And then they'd say, who did you see that you were really impressed with? What did you see in terms of practice you really liked? Because the truth is, unless you can identify the strengths that people have, it's really hard to get the person then to want to move toward improvement.
Oh, I'm sorry. Mark, repeat that one more time. Unless you can identify the strengths, you're saying so much good stuff. I want to make sure that we get it. That is so good. Say that one more time. Unless you can.
Well, it resonates, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Unless a person can see the good that you're starting with in terms of a teacher's practice, unless the teacher and the principal then can have a real conversation, and that's hard to do.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of principals have a hard time getting the other person, in this case the teacher, to talk about the win, the thing that they did right, So oftentimes in life, we use a deficit model. We look for what's wrong instead of what's right. And what's so frustrating about that is the research is so crystal clear that that's not a road that has a positive end. Instead, you just get resistance. And so if you can identify something a teacher is doing well and then be able to converse with that teacher about it, you then can open up all kinds of new avenues of improvement that you wouldn't be able to otherwise. And really, that's what the SAM process is. It's not filling someone's head with this is the way you should do something. It's opening someone's head to the idea of anything is possible. If we do this together, if we don't think there's just one way, if we're open to the idea that together we can help kids do better, you have amazing things happen.
I was honored to be one of the speakers at your most recent conference, and you noted, and I also discovered talking with the principals there, that being a SAM principal is a very courageous thing, because you are asking someone, often someone who is a subordinate, to sit down and go through your calendar on a daily basis and be an accountability partner.
Well, that's true, Will, because really we kind of warn principals who say they want to do the SAM process, be careful what you ask for. What you're really saying is you're willing to be irritated a little bit every day by people in your building who have your good and your success at heart. You're willing to be asked to be a little uncomfortable sometimes. The truth is we all have great intentions, and, you know, the road to hell is paved with good intentions, right?
Right.
But, you know, so is the road to heaven. The difference is you actually realize those good intentions. You actually do them. And the SAM's job is really to take the principal to heaven, make sure that the good things the principal wants to do and needs to think about doing and how to make it actually happen are actually realized.
What results have you seen through the SAM process?
Well, when we first did this work, the Wallace Foundation funded it as a research effort, and we wanted to see how principals currently were spending their time. So we developed a tool, we shadow principals for a week, and we determined how they're spending their time between instructional work, things designed to improve teacher practice and student engagement and parent engagement, and then things that were more managerial, the running of the school. And what we found in the initial study is principals were spending about 70% of their time on the management side and about 30% on the instructional side.
Wow.
When we did that initial work, we looked at schools all around the country because we wanted to see, is this regional, is it different? And what we found is there was really no difference whether the school was large or small, urban or suburban, rich or poor. You saw the same percentages pretty much playing out in schools across the country.
Mm-hmm.
So then we developed the SAM process to see if you could change that. What we saw in the first pilot was principals changing their focus from about 30% instruction to about 70% instruction.
And wow.
With their numbers.
So that was, I'm sorry, I want to emphasize this. It was completely flip-flop. The amount of time that they were spending administratively as opposed to instructionally flip-flopped by simply making them more aware of how they spent their time. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah. I probably wouldn't say simply, though, because it sounds simple, but
yes.
Think how hard it is to change any behavior, and boy, you're the expert in terms of getting people to think about that.
Yeah.
It's not an easy thing at all, and so it appears simple, but it's pretty complex, because you're asking not just the principal to change how he or she does things, but you're asking the school community to see them differently. What we saw in these SAM schools, when you began changing how the principal interacted and what the principal did, it caused a ripple effect all through the school in terms of what people viewed the principal's main role as being. 3 years later, after the initial pilots were done, what we saw was not just a doubling of the time a principal was spending instructionally, but we saw some interesting factors occur. First, teachers were happier. They weren't trying to transfer out.
Teachers were happier, significant.
Oh, yep. It was a significant change.
Yeah.
Number of student discipline referrals dropped dramatically. And the rate of student achievement gain, it doubled. And what does that tell you? The potential is there. You just have to harness it. And you harness it by working with people and not putting people in a position where they think they should tell people what to do,
mm-hmm.
but they talk through, how do we do this together better? And that really is what SAM is.
So they have the goals, and I discovered that from talking to the principals. They know where they would like to be. They're working 90 miles an hour, 16 hours a day. The thing is that they are possibly, as we all do, majoring in minors, not necessarily putting their efforts towards that which is going to take them toward their goals. And the SAM process helps.
Right. I think so, Will. And I think one of the reasons you were so liked by all the SAM principals in San Diego at the National Conference, you were the highest rated speaker, by the way.
Thank you.
I think the reason they liked what you had to say is it resonates so well. They can see that things are possible if you're willing to envision it, and that it's a question of habit. If you wish to change the habit, you can, but pretty much it's all up to you. It's the willingness you have to engage in. You have to say, I want to do this. And that's what's kind of fun with SAM principal teams. The other thing that's kind of interesting that you see in SAM schools is you see a change in what it means to be a leader. Instead of the principal being the sole leader, you see a lot of other people in the building becoming identified as folks that can work together as part of a leadership team, if you will. We have schools in our SAM network where I would say a lead custodian plays a very important role in helping the school move forward. How? By helping the principal stay focused on their instructional time. Many custodians in SAM schools will have the principal's calendar, and when they see the principal, they'll say, hey, Principal Joe, aren't you supposed to be in Mrs. Stevens' room?
Let me hear that again. The custodians have access to the principal's calendar, and they can also sometimes, if they're in the SAMS process with them, hold them accountable for their where they are and throughout the day. Is that right?
Well, absolutely. Remember, I was saying that, you know, the role of the SAM team is to take the principal's good intentions and realize.
Right.
And so what the SAM team looks at is what pulls the principal away. And the result, the reality is a principal's life is pretty much driven by the interruptions of the day. It's interrupt driven. The SAM team attempts to mitigate that. And so in many schools, they will ask other people in the building, even a custodian, can you help us get the principal so the principal can actually do this instructional leadership work?
Wow.
So when you see him in the hallway, you know what his calendar is. Help him get to where he's supposed to be. Don't pull him away from the instructional work because of something that's management related, unless it's absolutely necessary.
Wow. People have so much disregard, I think, and negative. Like I said in my introduction, schools seem to be such a battlefield. And yet what this is demonstrating is that possibly what we don't need to do is universally, institutionally change the school program. What we need to do is to remember that morale filters down from the top and to work with the principals to make the teachers happier. Because I also recall you saying that oftentimes principals end up with more personal and family and exercise time by going through the SAM process. So they're better off. Is that correct?
It is. You know, one of the things that we really push a principal to think about is re-examine your thinking if what you believe is that more is better. Because really working more does not necessarily mean working more successfully. And so pull back and ask yourself, what's my low part of the day? You know, when am I least effective and what can I do to mitigate that? And so the SAM principal team, you know, focuses on those kinds of things well. The other thing I'd say is when you think about it, the reason this country has been so successful is because of public education. It's been because we believe that everybody should have an equal shot, and
yes,
it's our responsibility to do things that will outlive us. And public education is just that. It's an investment in a future that isn't necessarily even our future. It's our descendants' future.
Mm-hmm.
And public education really has done remarkable things. What's kind of sad is it's a reflection of our society that we are so negatively focused and we look at what's not right instead of what can be or is right. And so instead of moving toward what can we do to make something better, oftentimes what we see happening in society is just a lack of heroes, a lack of belief that anything is possible and that we individually have a responsibility to make it so.
Mark Schellinger is my guest. He's the executive director of the SAMS Innovation Project. You can reach them at samsconnect.com. Now, for my listeners who are hearing this and saying, oh, this is great, I would love to have my daughter's son's school involved in this. How exactly are schools and individual principals expanding into your program? How does that come about?
Well, you know, it happens a lot of different ways. We sometimes will have a principal call and say, I want to do this. And so we work from the principal level first and we'll work in their school and the district becomes interested. We've had other places where it's a district initiative. Currently, we work with 700 plus schools in 18 states. some places like Hillsborough County or Denver, Colorado, or Charlotte, North Carolina, it's a district-wide initiative, and they are working to make sure that the SAM process is available in every school. Other places, it's one principal who says, I wish to do this. Sometimes the funding for doing the initial SAM work comes from different grants or comes from the school's regular budget. But if you went to Council Bluffs, you'd find that the business community there in that Nebraska city, or excuse me, that Iowa city, mm-hmm. actually is paying for the process for their school.
Wow.
So it's a variety of sources. One of the things I always tell people is never let money be the reason you don't do good things. Always stop and say, is this the right thing? If it is, now let's figure out how we make it real.
What's your vision for the future of education, Mark?
Well, you know, I feel so fortunate to be an American, and I know you do too. We live in a country that has just given us so many opportunities. I'm completely convinced that education is the reason the country works so well. It creates a possibility for everyone to be greater than they are. And so, to me, as long as we stay focused on equity and making sure that everyone has that kind of equal opportunity in life and in the educational services we provide, we're doing the right thing. I really do believe that one of the best questions you can ask yourself is, when you're gone from this world, whether you believe in an afterlife or not, when you're gone from this world, what will you be proudest of that still exists? And many people say, well, my family. Mm-hmm. But let's set that aside for a minute. Besides your family, people you're related to, what is it you're going to be happiest about? And I think education, for most teachers, it's an easy answer, that they know that people are going to remember that they did good things, that they helped someone do better than they would have otherwise. The helping professions, and education being one, healthcare another, the church still a third, I think provides something in our lives that is remarkably important. And so the future of public education or education in general, I think is up to us. I think we have a moral and ethical responsibility to make sure that it's better for them than it was for us.
Well, and you all are certainly leading the way to that end. Mark Schellinger, thank you very much. Find Sam's Innovation Project on the web at samsconnect.com. We'll be right back.
Just when everything seems so dark, they said we better accentuate the positive, eliminate the negative, and latch on to the affirmative. Don't mess with Mr. In Between. No, don't mess with Mr. In Between.
What if you could get inside the heads of 50 of the happiest people alive? What if you could hear their stories, learn how they overcame life's challenges, and discover their secrets to happiness? This is Happy Stories by Will Bowen. In Happy Stories, you'll meet parents, business people and entrepreneurs, students, retirees and construction workers, school principals, stay-at-home moms, and more who have one thing in common. They have discovered how to be happy, regardless of what life throws their way. Happy people hang around with other happy people as a way of staying happy. Read Happy Stories, and it's like having 50 very happy people with you at all times. Happy Stories by Will Bowen, available in print, ebook, and audiobook, read by the author. Happy Stories from Grand Harbor Press. Read these happy stories now, and your life will become a happy story as well.
Welcome to the Namaste Lounge, where singers and songwriters share their music, their muse, and their musings. My guest today is Gloria Gaynor, Gloria Gaynor's number one hit single, I Will Survive, debuted in 1978 to enormous success. The disco hit went double platinum, and more than three decades later, it still strikes a chord among men and women every year, everywhere. Over the years, Gloria Gaynor has received thousands of personal messages from adoring fans whose lives have been transformed by this timeless song. From individuals triumphing over illness, to those suffering from the painful loss of a loved one, to others piecing their lives together after bearing witness to a national tragedy, I Will Survive has become an emotional anthem for millions. Gloria Gaynor's book, We Will Survive, shares 40 of these inspirational true stories about survivors of all kinds, individuals who have found comfort, hope, and courage through the power of this one song. Gloria Gaynor, welcome to the Namaste Lounge.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Now, I Will Survive was written by Freddie Perren and Dina Fakaris. Can you tell us how the song came to your attention and why you chose to record it?
Well, I had gone out to California to record a song that the record company president had chosen for me to record. And at the same time, they made a deal with the producers that we had chosen, Dino and Freddie, that they could write the B-side. So when I asked them what the B-side was going to be, they asked me what kind of songs I like to sing, what kind of emotions I like to transmit when I'm performing. And after speaking with me about that, they determined that I was the one that they had been waiting for to record this song that they had written a couple of years prior, which turned out to be I Will Survive.
I've got all my life to live. I've got all my love to give.
Now, the song that you were supposed to record or that you did record was Substitute by the Righteous Brothers, if I understand, and yet DJs liked the B-side better. Why do you think that was? I mean, here you had this established song with a beautiful cover, and yet they went for something that was so different.
Well, I went for something different. When I first heard the lyrics of the song, I realized it was a Thomas lyric that I was at the moment relating, when I read the lyrics, I was relating the lyrics to situations that I was at the moment going through and felt that other people would do the same. So when the record was finished, I took the two of them back to the record company and told them that I Will Survive was a song that they should be promoting as the hit song. Unfortunately, they didn't agree. As a matter of fact, they wouldn't even listen to the song.
And I spent oh so many nights just feeling sorry for myself. I used to cry. But now I hold my head up high and you see me. Somebody new.
And so I took it along with my management team to Studio 54 and gave it to the DJ there, who was very popular. And he played it, his audience immediately loved it. And we gave him a stack of them to give to other DJs, friends of his around New York City. And when he did that, they began to play it in their clubs. The people loved it in those clubs as well. And then began to request it on radio.
Well, speaking of radio, it's the only disco song ever to win a disco Grammy. How does it feel to have a one-of-a-kind Grammy award?
It feels wonderful. I feel honored. Yeah.
I've got all my love to give. I'll survive. I will survive. Oh!
Now, the stories who appear in your book have overcome pain and loss to lead happy lives, and they were inspired enough by your song to reach out to you. Can you share some of the stories that really touched you and why you felt they belonged in the book?
Well, one of the stories that really touched me was a woman who believed that her entire life and her success in life depended on her looks, and that was what got her wherever she wanted to go and whatever she wanted to have, and until she had a car accident that literally ripped her face off, and she had to rebuild her life and her self-esteem on who she was as a person, who she was on the inside. And she not only did that, but went on to triumph and encourage other people to do the same.
Wow, what a story. Tell us another, would you?
Let me think. Another story that really touched me was a gentleman who told me of how he was sexually molested when he was a child by two of his father's friends on separate occasions. But the father trusted these two gentlemen to let him stay overnight in their homes, during which time they both sexually molested him. Later on, he went to his first, he thought it was normal, and then one of them did something that, as he was getting older, made him feel like, no, that's not normal, that's what they do with girls. And so he went to his father and told him about it, thinking that his father would champion his cause and go after these guys, and instead his father determined that he didn't want to sort of rock the neighborhood boat and cause trouble with friends, and so that nothing was done about it. And so he kind of internalized that until he was older and able to come up out of it. Not without the help of the song, I Will Survive.
The song came out, I was talking with someone about the song earlier today, and I was trying to in my mind, conjecture as to why it just struck such a chord. That was a period of time when women were really stepping into their own, would you agree? And mm-hmm. then after that, of course, we had the gay rights movement, and that was another, it became an anthem for that group of people as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that the song, first of all, gave voice to women in a man's world.
Yes.
And then went on to be accepted by people from every walk of life who felt that they just weren't going to let these things hold them down. They weren't going to let them keep them from surviving. It, the song really celebrates the tenacity of the human spirit.
And the endurance of triumph over challenge in life.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Wow. The book is called We Will Survive. It's by disco legend Gloria Gaynor. You can find out more at Gloria's website. It's www.GloriaGaynor.com. Gloria, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Maya Angelou is up next.
International Health Partners has completed three major projects in Tanzania. Now our project is to build the first pediatric hospital there. 18 million children in Tanzania under age 14 have no pediatric hospital to serve them. At Zinga, on the coast north of Dar es Salaam, we have begun by starting the outpatient unit. We invite you to help. Visit our website, ihptz.org. Find out who we are and what we do, and contribute by clicking on Just Give, or call 480-540-9317 and make a credit card donation. Your money will help build the first pediatric facility, and care for children under 5 years old will be free. You'll receive information on how each dollar was spent, pictures of what's going on at the facility, and we do not sell our donors' names and addresses to anyone. So go online now to ihptz.org. It's an act of love and caring, and it will help to change the world, one child at a time.
Welcome back to Envision Radio. I'm Will Bowen. You can receive these shows regularly, approximately once a week. If you set your device to podcast, simply open your podcast app on your smartphone or your tablet and do a search for Will Bowen. You can go to iTunes and also put in Will Bowen, or you can go to willbowenradio.com. You can connect with me on Facebook, facebook.com/Will Bowen. On Twitter, it's at WR Bowen. Well, most people know the name Maya Angelou, but not everyone is familiar with her rich and diverse history. Dr. Maya Angelou is a global renaissance woman. She is a celebrated poet, novelist, educator, dramatist, producer, actress, historian, filmmaker, and civil rights activist. She was born in 1928 in St. Louis, Missouri. Maya Angelou was raised in St. Louis as well as Stamps, Arkansas. In Arkansas, she experienced the brutality and racial discrimination, but also she absorbed the unshakable faith and values of traditional African-American family, community, and culture. As a teenager, Dr. Angelou's love for the arts won her a scholarship to study art and dance and drama at San Francisco's Labor School. In 1954 and 1955, Dr. Angelou toured Europe with a production of the opera Porgy and Bess. She studied modern dance with Martha Graham, danced with Alvin Ailey, appearing on television variety shows. In 1957, she recorded her first album, Calypso Lady. The following year, she moved to New York, where she joined the Harlem Writers Guild, acted in the historic off-Broadway production of Jean Genet's The Blacks, and wrote and performed Cabaret for Freedom. In 1960, Dr. Angelou moved to Cairo, Egypt, where she served as editor of the English-language weekly, The Arab Observer. During her years abroad, Dr. Angelou read and studied voraciously, mastering French, Spanish, Italian, Arabic, and the West African language Fanti. While in Ghana, she met with Malcolm X and in 1964 returned to America to help him build his new organization of African American Unity. Soon after Malcolm X's assassination, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. asked Dr. Angelou to serve as Northern Coordinator for the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. King's assassination, which tragically fell on Dr. Angelou's birthday in 1968, left her devastated. With the guidance of her friend, the novelist James Baldwin, she began work on the book that would become I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings. The list of her published verse, nonfiction, and fiction now includes more than 30 best-selling titles. A trailblazer in film and television, Dr. Angelou wrote the screenplay and composed the score for the 1972 film Georgia, Georgia. Her script, the first by an African-American woman ever to be filmed, was nominated for a Pulitzer Prize. She continues to appear on television and in films, including the landmark television adaptation of Alex Haley's Roots in 1977. In 1996, she directed her first feature film, Down in the Delta. Dr. Angelou has served on two presidential committees, was awarded the Presidential Medal of Arts in 2000, the Lincoln Medal in 2008, and has received three Grammy Awards. President Clinton requested that she compose a poem to read at his inauguration in 1993. Dr. Angelou's reading of her poem, On the Pulse of the Morning, was broadcast live across the world. And in addition to those many accolades and awards, Dr. Maya Angelou was recently named the Spiritual Hero of the Year for 2013 by Science of Mind magazine. Maya Angelou joins me now from her home in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Dr. Angelou, thank you for being with us.
It's wonderful to be with you again, Reverend Dolan.
Thank you. Dr. Angelou, how did it feel to be named a spiritual hero?
It's such an excitement. First off, it's a wonderful thing when peers say you're doing a good job.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, I don't know, it may get better than that, but I doubt it. And well, of course, when the Creator says, I sent you there and you've been doing a good job, that's better.
Yes.
But sometimes I think the Creator uses one's peers to do that job. And so when one's peers say, good on you, mate, you've been doing a good job. It's very exciting.
Well, tell me, who have been some of your spiritual heroes, Dr. Angelou?
Well, you're one.
Well, bless you. Thank you.
So many people are spiritual leaders to me who I've never met. Some I've met. Some have such great ideas. Your idea about the complaint bracelet is just brilliant.
Thank you.
And so many people, my preacher, we have teachers. This is one of the great blessings, I think, the Creator has given us, that one, that there have been teachers, and that not only have there been teachers, but we have been created with the desire to learn. And so we respect teachers. And so the teachers are Jesus, the great teacher. Mm-hmm. Just imagine. I just look at the teaching and the generosity of Jesus Christ, who when asked, how should I pray? He said, say, Our Father, which means that he's a child of God, and he's saying that so are we. That's amazingly generous.
I do. And then, of course, the students go on to become a teacher, and then it's this wonderful symbiotic and ongoing experience.
Exactly. And the very idea of forgiveness.
Yes.
Oh, I love it. I'm so grateful to be a child of God. I continue with an attitude of gratitude.
Well, you may have just answered my next question. I actually asked some of my Facebook followers to share a question that they would like to ask you, and this one seemed very representative. This woman wanted to know, Dr. Angela, what do you feel is the most important thing a person can do to live a joyful, peaceful life every day?
That be constantly forgiving.
Constantly.
Grateful and forgiving. Those two together will, I think, take you through anxiety and depression and physical sickness and all sorts of things. Just continue to be grateful and forgiving.
Grateful and forgiving. Dr. Angela, one final question. If you could sum your life up thus far in one word, what would that word be?
Joy.
Joy. Well, you have certainly brought a lot of joy and a lot of transformation to our world, Dr. Angela. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much. Dr. Bowen, I'm grateful to you. I'm grateful to God for you.
Thank you, and you as well. God bless.
Bye.
Bye-bye. You know, it's quite common for every generation to lament the next generation that's coming along as if somehow we are the heroes and they are the recipients. In my opinion, there is much to be excited about with this future generation because they are searching rather than for status and possessions. They are searching for meaning in their lives. And they are discovering that meaning comes from serving other people. Every day I'm contacted by some young person who wants to build or create some nonprofit or create some business that is going to give all the money to help other people's lives. So there's a lot of reason to be sanguine about our future because there are a lot of burgeoning heroes coming up through the ranks right now. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you to my guests, of course, Mark Schellinger of the SAMS Innovation Project, Gloria Gaynor, as well as Dr. Maya Angelou. You can reach me on the internet at will@willbowen.com. Thanks for listening. Enjoy today. Bye-bye, everybody. When you have me like a fool, let it take you home. Take it in.